Hey guys, so parts of Washington have been abuzz with some more information now on the Biden corruption scandal. Have you guys been keeping up with this, Sonny?
A little bit, yes. I have to say, I've been a little preoccupied preparing for baby to be here in just a few
Oh yes,
days, but
Sonny
I'm
is
keeping up on
very
Twitter.
pregnant. Yeah,
Very.
very, very pregnant. And Hogan, I know you've been watching.
Oh yeah, of course. I'm in DC, so it's all anyone can talk about over here. Now, hopefully it'll trickle down to real Americans out there when they start to pay attention after these summer months, exactly what the Republicans have, which is staggering, which is really why I'm so excited about the guests tonight.
Yeah, our guest tonight is really one of the reporters, one of the journalists who has been all over this from the very beginning, breaking lots of big pieces of it. And it's going to be very exciting to talk to him. And while I'm thinking about this as we go into it, please like, follow, subscribe, and comment, and do all the things on the podcast because this is the Line Drive Podcast. And we are joined now by the great John Solomon, founder of justthenews.com and a veteran reporter of many years. A couple of John, let me embarrass you here by going over your stellar resume. 20 years at the Associated Press, including time as the assistant bureau chief for Washington, D.C., worked at the Washington Post, at The Hill, which is one of the Beltway publications, and the Washington Times. And now you're off doing your own thing at justthenews.com. Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us. And anything to promote first, John, before we get going?
No, my wife likes to say that when I started as a reporter, tablets were still stone. They weren't iPads. So that tells you a little something about how long I've been around. But no, listen, it's just great to be with you. I love the work you guys do. I love Line Drive. And there's a lot to talk about. We're living in a really remarkable moment of history.
Yeah, so let's go right into that. You've been one of the ones who's been, there aren't too many who are even willing to document any of this stuff, but you have really torn into it. And we got some new news just today from House Republicans, some more information about the Biden corruption scandal. What can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. It's an old fashioned follow the money, which is that, it's funny. I was in Florida recently and I was in line for get some food for the staff. And the guy recognized me, opened up his shirt and said, I need more conspiracy theories. All mine came true. And I think that's a great summary of the Biden years, right? We all started with, if you believe that Joe Biden fired a prosecutor or that Hunter Biden got China money, you were a conspiracy theorist. And now the evidence is overwhelming. And in fact, the only conspiracy theory was that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. And that was Joe Biden's conspiracy theory. Today, the James Comer-led House Oversight Committee put together an extraordinary memo. We now are up to $20 million that flowed into Biden family accounts from foreign sources. So it keeps growing. It was $6 million. It was $10 million. It was $12 million. Now it's $20 million. And James Comer told me tonight, it's going to go higher. We found some more money we'll be able to release soon.
Wow.
And what you get in today's memo, unlike any prior one of these reports that Comer's put out, is you start to see a pattern. Now, we knew a pattern before, which is that Hunter Biden and his business partners seem to target foreign oligarchs that had legal troubles, right? You got Ukraine and Burisma. You've got a guy in Romania that had a corruption issue. You got a Russian oligarch who can't even get into the American banking system. She has a problem getting her money into banks. Her husband's the Moscow mayor, who the State Department considered corrupt. So they're targeting this, and you see they're making their money, millions off of people that all have some unsavory issues in their background or around them. But today you see something very different. Today you see the timing of large payments of money that go into Hunter Biden connected accounts. And then soon after, Joe Biden just happens to meet with those business executives that just plunked down the money for Hunter Biden, Devin Archer, and all those business partners that were running this operation. It's really stunning. One of them is actually within the same couple of days. There is a businessman in Kazakhstan. He's trying to get an energy deal done with Hunter Biden. And he drops a $142,000 check into Hunter Biden's one of the Hunter Biden connected accounts. The next day, that check is taken back out and sent to a luxury car company because Hunter Biden is asking for a new Porsche. We're going to put the emails out tonight so people can see what sort of life Hunter Biden. Where's my Porsche? I need my Porsche. Well, what happens to that guy once he writes the check? He gets dinner at Cafe Milano with Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. Now, Yelena Botarina, well-known Russian oligarch. She plunks down $3.5 million in February of 2014. And in April 2014, she's with Joe Biden at Cafe Milano, having a nice dinner with the vice president. A couple of weeks ago, when the Democrats were trying to slam Devin Archer and discredit Hunter Biden's former business partner, kind of funny that they're turning on their own, eating their own. Dan Goldman actually said, oh, all this was the illusion of access. No, it wasn't. There was direct access to Joe Biden, dinners with Joe Biden, phone calls with Joe Biden, and the timing of the money flowing to Hunter Biden and the delivery of Joe Biden, the brand, as Devin Archer called him, is very close proximity in at least three very powerful anecdotes. One, the Elena Bredarina, the Russian. Two, the Kazakhstan crowd. And three, Burisma Holdings. That's the one that started the whole Joe Biden thing. I was the guy back in March of 2019 that wrote the story that Hunter Biden, or that Joe Biden bragged that he had fired a Ukraine prosecutor who was investigating his son's thing. And I told them they weren't getting their $1 billion, and son of a bee, they fire the prosecutor. Well, that's what happens when you actually extort someone. They tend to do the things you ask them to do. But from that moment now, that's the same company. And you see that they're dropping in about $1 million a year in Hunter Biden's account, $83,333,000 every month into Hunter Biden. And in April, at a time when the company's kind of concerned that the U.S. government hasn't made its corruption investigations of Burisma go away, son of a gun, not son of a bee, but son of a gun, Hunter Biden lands the Burisma executive, Vadim Pozharsky, a private meeting with Joe Biden. And then the next day, in case Democrats have any doubts that it was an illusion, Vadim Pozharsky, the guy, goes here, sends a nice letter to Hunter Biden saying, thanks for getting me some quality time with your dad. That is how far this story has advanced in a very short time. We went from being a conspiracy theory to now Joe Biden is basically delivering the goods for Hunter Biden as millions are flowing into the family accounts.
Yeah, and John, Hogan can probably address this since he worked in the White House, but you're talking about a dinner at Cafe Milano with the guy who was at that time the vice president of the United States. You know, the VP doesn't just breeze into a place without a lot of groundwork, Secret Service being there, checking it out, checking out the people he's going to be having dinner with. And you know that the VP would be briefed on who's going to be there. So everyone knew everything. That's standard protocol, Hogan, right?
Oh, absolutely. You would never let one of the principals go anywhere without first running the routes, making sure it was clear, having your Secret Service all over the place. And that's what's so frustrating. Look, I've been to Cafe Milano many times. I've never had one conversation with anybody about the weather. And they weren't even necessarily good with me. So that's just dumb on its face. But John, this is one of the most frustrating things for me. Look, I was a journalist back in the 90s, early 2000s. I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but the lack of curiosity from these reporters. Like, if you called me and said you have a secret email or scratchy hidden video, I mean, I had to run out of the newsroom and found you and found the tape and verified it, and I had to run it, and it had been leading every newscast in a local market or a national market ever. Now it's just like they don't even care, or they don't want to know, or they're trying to cover it up, or all the thing, or all the above. What do you think they need to see, the mainstream media anyway, that gets them kind of engaged at all in this story?
I think the only thing that will get them to see anything is the shame and chagrin of the American public, who are sick and tired of them being misled by these clowns at the Washington Post and the New York Times. Go take a look at the Washington Post fact checker over the last few years, and all the things they told us were conspiracy theories that we now know are 100% true. And next week, right, another big shoe is going to drop that's going to undercut another narrative that the Washington Post and the New York Times and others forced on the American public. They misled us. They told us the Hunter Biden laptop was misinformation. Listen, I made two phone calls in October 2020, and within 25 minutes, I could get confirmation from the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, and the FBI that the laptop was not Russian disinformation. It had been corroborated by the FBI. That did not take me a lot of work. I'm not a superstar reporter accomplishing that. Those guys went with the story. They went with the 51. Not a single one of them said, it's 2 weeks from election. Should we be a little dubious about this claim? There is a willful desire to be blind right now. It's no longer malfeasance. It's no longer negligence. It's no longer lazy journalism. The journalism establishment, particularly in Washington, is part of a protection racket. And I say this because recently I dug up an email in a FOIA where you see a reporter for a major news organization around the time that Joe Biden's going to Ukraine. There were these whispers, hey, Hunter Biden's working for a corrupt company. Joe Biden's supposed to be fighting corruption. This looks bad. And a reporter writes back to Joe Biden's team, you'll have to put a gun to my head for me to write a negative story about Joe Biden. If you had any doubt there was a protection racket, that email kind of pretty much tells you what you need to know. And that protection racket has been around since 15, and it exists today. There are some good people. Listen, CBS News joined me on the IRS whistleblower. That was a big accomplishment. We got the mainstream to cover those whistleblowers legitimately. But the majority of the political press in Washington are still feeding at a trough that requires them to protect this president.
Just real quickly, sorry, Sonny, before you go. Okay. There are two things here. It's obviously, it's not just about who they prosecute. It's about who they protect, as you just pointed out, right? I mean, they have an agenda here. But I can't tell how many calls I got in the White House from someone saying, hey, a source familiar with says X, right? Someone close to the project says, or near the meeting says, and I had to defend that, or I would come on the record and say, no, I was in the meeting. None of that ever happened. And they had all these sources at like the CIA and the FBI and the DOD. You're telling me they couldn't be bothered to make one phone call to those same sources who were happy to have conversations with us the whole time or about us the whole time? That's why I just get so angry and furious and frustrated by the whole thing.
It's a great
and way. So what would you say to Mr. Acosta when he asked you these things?
Is this a family program? I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, John, I want to go back here just a second. I was watching your show on Real America's Voice earlier tonight, and you had Representative Comer on, and he was talking about the obstruction and the challenges that he has faced, him and the Oversight Committee have faced every step of the way in this investigation. They are getting pushback from every federal agency that there is. They're refusing to cooperate with them, honestly, in an effort to protect Joe Biden. That's exactly what they're doing. So, I mean, I'm just wondering, how do you think we get around this when the corruption clearly runs so deep? He is being protected at every single turn.
Yeah. I think there are three things that play into the favor of the American people. The one is the Democrats and their elitist friends in the media and in the government think the American people are stupid. And to that, they make a great, great mistake. The American people have figured this racket out. And by the way, they probably figured it out a while ago. Maybe they got bamboozled in 2020 with the whole Russia disinformation thing, but they've known for some time. And how do I know that? There's a poll that came out, and it's not possible that these are readers of the Washington Post and New York Times, because 52% of people now say in a poll by a liberal news or a liberal polling company that they believe Joe Biden committed impeachable offenses. How are they getting that information? And the answer is, it's because what you're doing at Line Drive, what I'm doing at Just the News, we're able now to get around the traditional blockade of the media and get information to the public in spite of the best efforts of the protection racket here in Washington. Mm-hmm. I think that that is a very big thing. James Comer's story is getting to the American public around all of the blockades of the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Associated Press, and other people. I think the second thing is you have an extraordinary number of whistleblowers. I've been in this town 35 years. I can't remember a time in my entire career where I've been approached by 100 whistleblowers total in my career. I've been approached by 113 whistleblowers inside the Biden administration in the last 6 months. I don't have enough reporters to chase what's coming in. We have patriotic people that will not tolerate what the government is currently doing. And I think that's cracking the thing. All right, you may not get it officially from the FBI. The FBI didn't want to give Chuck Grassley the 1023 FD-1023 form with the bribery allegation, but some whistleblower walked into him. And then God bless Chuck Grassley, he went to the Senate floor and plunked it down for the American people to see. And Chris Ray had a bad night, I guess. Those things I think are breaking the facade. And I think the third thing is Americans have this common sense and they can start to put together. All right, I kind of got it now. I don't care what Joe Biden says. He told me to get China money. His son just was willing to plead guilty to getting China money. He said his son did anything wrong. His son was about to plead guilty to tax evasion. He said he never met with any of his business partners. The business partners saying, of course we met with them. In fact, Joe Biden's friends are saying, of course Joe Biden met with the Chinese. I think the American people deductively have now realized that they've been lied to. And in politics, there's no more personal position than the president, right? You kind of assume your congressman is your congressman, and you get down below that. No one cares. The president's a personal decision. When Joe Biden looked into the camera and said, my family didn't get money from China, I never met with my son's business partners, my son's never did anything wrong, and that laptop you're hearing about is Russian disinformation, he lied directly into the camera for the American people. And I think that's going to have a powerful effect. And that lying over time starts to create this distrust, this doubting Thomas thing in America, or boy cry wolf too many times. I think people now know, I'm not going to trust Joe Biden on this anymore. I kind of know what was going on. They were running an influence peddling scheme.
You know, isn't it I think the fact that the messages seeping, or the facts of all this are seeping into the American consciousness, it's actually not that complicated. And that sort of helps, I think. A lot of times Washington scandals or any kind of scandal involving movement of money can be kind of complicated, but yeah. This is very simple. You know, they had a product that they were selling. The product was Joe Biden. These foreign business people, for whatever reason, they were in legal troubles or whatever, wanted access to Joe Biden because he was vice president of the United States. He was very powerful. So they showered members of the Biden family with millions of dollars in cash so that they could get Joe Biden's ear. And then Joe Biden miraculously appears on the phone or at dinners, you know, other meetings. And I think enough people have seen, we were talking about this before we started rolling tape, have seen mafia movies where the don of the family is not the one who ever gives the order or ever says the incriminating thing. He's protected from that.
That's right.
And it's so obvious. It's his very presence that completes the conspiracy. It's the fact that Joe Biden joins the meeting. That's the missing piece. That's what makes the circle. And I think people can see that. So doesn't it have the benefit of being actually a very simple scandal?
Well, first off, Tim, that's the best explanation anyone's given. You just summarize it in such a way that everybody goes, that's it. That's the scandal. That's exactly what happened. There's a moment in the Devin Archer testimony where he goes, you know, everyone's dancing around the Joe. He said, come on, let's admit what's going on. Joe Biden showed up because that's how his son made money. And right. It's just that great moment of clarity where, like, all the others in the newsroom or in the interview room were just trying to play stupid about it. He's like, oh, let me call you what it is. It's the brand. He delivered the brand. You know, just a generation ago, and I think this goes to what Hogan said earlier, just a generation ago, we had an identical influence peddling scam. It was the Clinton White House fundraising scandal, where China, all these Chinese guys walked money in, and they got time in the Lincoln bedroom. They got time at the White House coffees and teas, and everybody got it. People were paying for access, and those people paying for access wanted something from Bill Clinton. Sometimes Bill Clinton delivered it. Sometimes he didn't. But everyone was pretty, and the reporters at the time knew it. They were curious. Like, all right, why are 10 Buddhist monks showing up at a fundraiser for Bill Clinton? That doesn't make any sense. Oh, wait, they're Chinese cutouts. Okay, now I get it. I think that curiosity that was there in the journalism industry is gone. But the American people are just as deductive now as they were then. Like, I know what's going on. This is like the China fundraising scandal a few years ago, or app scam in the 80s. It is a very simple, time-tested scandal where people use money to buy access, influence. And in the case of Burisma, as Devin Archer told us, they bought protection. They wanted Joe Biden to protect them from future prosecution.
Yeah, well, Hogan, I'm sorry. Back to this prosecutor that he got fired in Ukraine, that is the most obvious deliverable that he provided, right? And it's a miraculous sequence of coincidental events, right?
Yeah.
That Burisma, the company that was paying Hunter $83,000 a month, wanted this prosecutor gone.
Yep.
Joe Biden threatens to withhold $1 billion in foreign aid unless the prosecutor is made gone. Lo and behold, son of a bee, the prosecutor gets gone. And the media looks at this, and honest to God, I've seen them say this on Twitter. There's no proof that any of that was connected. You have got to be kidding me. That's not even a circumstantial case. That's
I got run out of the mainstream news media for reporting it. I literally got run. The Hill got so much pressure. I had to leave the Hill. Just think about that when you look at that. And it was such an obvious story. No, I never doubted it because my sources were inside the FBI. I knew in 19 what the FBI knew, and now we all knew then. That's what guided my reporting. There's a very important moment. Most of the pillars of the Biden defense story have fallen apart, right? The Hunter Biden laptop's real. Yeah, you got China money. Yeah, your son was a tax cheat. Yeah, you met with the business partners, all that stuff. But there's one very important storyline that sustained the first impeachment trial against President Trump. And that was, Joe Biden did all those things, but he didn't do it for Hunter Biden. He did it because it was official U.S. policy. And next week, we're going to have a lot of fun. I'm probably booking myself on a repeat performance here. But next week, we're going to put out some documents. And we're just going to see how well that claim holds up. How well the impeachment witness's testimony holds up, how well the fact checkers at the Washington Post hold up, because when people see the documents that I fought 3.5 years to get, there's going to be a very different narrative about Joe Biden, the prosecutor, and son of a bee, that $1 billion loan guarantee. So we're going to have some fun next week.
I cannot wait, because I've had a lot of fun to this point. So more fun is even better. listen, one of the things you touched on, and Tim, Tony, you did too, but I think when I was years ago, when I was in college, I took one summer class, and this guy was in politics. That was why I had a minor in politics. And he said to the class one time, he said, you know, you really lose elections when you surprise the electorate. So read my lips, no new taxes, and then you raise taxes. Clinton was a dirtbag. So when he got caught to it, no one cared because everyone that was baked in the cake. Joe Biden has this persona of Mr. Nice Guy, Mr. Family Man, old Uncle Joe, Mr. Steady Hand. He can bring all these warring factions together and get them to do things. He knows the game. He knows all the players in town and around the globe. He's got all this strength and all these characteristics that make him just, you know, the adult is back in charge. The good, calm grandpa's back in charge. Mm-hmm. And now what we're seeing is he's rejecting, refusing to acknowledge a grandchild, right? We're seeing the stuff you've been reporting on and so many others with the laptop and foreign business dealings, et cetera, lying about what he knew when he knew it. Do you think this is surprising enough for people based on the narrative that the media themselves has created? And regardless of the interference, now they're trying to do in the media. Do you think this is enough to really surprise the American people to go, wait a minute, the policies are horrible. Don't get me wrong. They're really hurting us, impacting our lives in a negative way. But this persona of him being a nice guy and him being a good person is just all of a sudden another conspiracy theory, a complete lie, if you will. Do you think that really impacts an election?
Listen, I think the grandchild thing was very telling, right? It's a very small anecdote that makes a very big statement about what sort of person Joe Biden and the Biden family are. They weren't only willing to deny a laptop, they were willing to deny the existence of one of their children, which, by the way, was never really in doubt, right, from what we know now from the court records. Right. And I think people are beginning to put connections together, which is, he lied about Hunter Biden, he lied about his grandchild. He lied about Afghanistan. Wait, he told me that he filed exactly what the Pentagon did. Now the Pentagon's like, oh, no, you didn't. And by the way, 13 people died because of that lie, because of that malfeasance. He's lying at the border. People keep hearing there's nothing going out the border. Like, well, yes, there is. My kid died the other day from a fentanyl that came across the border. I think it's that there's a linear string coming through the Biden presidency, which is he lied about things big, lied about things small, lied about things about policy. And as a result, our country is worse off than we were. And maybe he really lied to us to get his job. I mean, that October last presidential debate where he cuts off Donald Trump's questions to him about your crooked son. You can go through that debate. Now, there's not a single sentence that Joe Biden said about Hunter Biden that turned out to be true. He lied in his last job interview before getting the best job or the most powerful job in America. I think it's a cumulative effect now. And when polling time comes around, I'm not convinced Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? That's really insane.
Who would it be? Who would it be, do you think, if it's not him?
Well, if you ask Gavin Newsom, I think Gavin Newsom thinks it's going to be him. I don't know. I mean, he's acting like a guy waiting in the wings, right? He's being very nice to Joe Biden, but, you know, he's going down to the border. He's doing all these things. He's debating Ron DeSantis on Hannity.
Yeah, we'll see if that actually happens.
He's not true.
He showed up at the White House when Joe was out of town, didn't he?
Yeah.
Although, funny. He was great. He has said he's not on Kamala
to make sure she was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John, you've mentioned a couple of times tonight that the American people, you think, are starting to see through all of this. They're seeing through Joe Biden's lies and everything else that's just going on crazy in our world right now. Do you think the American people are starting to see through the Trump indictments that keep piling on one after the other? I know his polling continues to go up after each indictment. But we've talked about this a few times on the podcast. I wonder how the typical suburban woman views these indictments. Does she say, you know, oh, he's finally getting what he deserves? Or is she saying, this doesn't seem quite right? You know, there's one on top of the other. Would this be happening if he wasn't running for president?
I'm a little handicapped because I'm not in the demographic, but I'm going to make a guess from some of the conversations I've had on recently. Listen, I still think that suburban women particularly, and again, I don't mean to pick on them, but the polling confirms this. There's something visceral about Donald Trump. And if you don't understand the New York swag, if you don't understand George Steinbrenner, I've said many times, Donald Trump is the George Steinbrenner of politics. You hated George Steinbrenner because he won. You hated George Steinbrenner because he's always firing the manager. You hated George Steinbrenner because he showed up his players and shamed them. And then you realize, hey, George Steinbrenner won like 5, 7, 8 World Series. I don't know what the number is. And you go, hey, he's a winner. I think there's something visceral. If you don't understand that sort of smash mouth New York culture that Donald Trump grew up in, you have a visceral reaction to the guy, which, and I listen, I know women in my life that go, I just can't vote for him. If he was Jesus Christ, I can't vote for him. He just drives me nuts. I don't think that goes away. I think people are able to compartmentalize, which is, all right, we have Joe Biden, and he's trying to run not one, not two, not three, but maybe four prosecutions of his political rival before 2020. I thought they did that in Venezuela, not in America. And I think they can compartmentalize that. And you see the polling shows that a large majority of Americans think these prosecutions are political. At the same time, that doesn't solve Donald Trump's problem for getting elected in the general election. He could easily win the primary. I think that he has to solve how do I connect with people that kind of left me after 2016? And some of them are going to come back because Joe Biden turned out to be a worse option. If you're a car automaker in Michigan, your life got a lot worse with Joe Biden's EV world, right? Electric vehicles taking your job away. China's going to have your job. So maybe they come back home. I think moms and dads and suburban moms, particularly, who probably thought, I've had enough of this guy. He's just obnoxious. I don't like him. Are looking and say, well, wait a second. But the other guy wants to put a biological male in my daughter's locker room. That ain't happening. Right. So maybe I got to go back. There is a little world history that happened just very recently. And I think it could be telling about what the dynamic could be for Donald Trump if he were to get to the general election. And that is, look at Benjamin Netanyahu, under indictment for corruption, but he got out of office. People were tired of it. They said, we're done with Netanyahu. We've done it all. Great, great guy. Gone, done. And then all of a sudden, the world got a lot worse for Israel. Things seemed dark. The team that replaced Netanyahu felt a lot less accomplished. And they went back to a guy who was about to start a corruption trial. I think sometimes in moments of crisis, and I think Americans see us in an economic security and maybe a moral crisis, that you might want to go back to the guy you knew did better, even if you got your qualms with him. And I think that's going to have to be one of the pivot arguments that Donald Trump makes if he gets to the general election. But I still see the visceral reaction to people. People who don't like Donald Trump, they still don't like him. But some are thinking, you know what, even though I don't like him, Joe Biden, do I want to trust my grandchildren to that? Maybe not. And that may be what sort of decision happens in November of 2024.
You've a couple of times you've mentioned and referred to the way the media is protecting Biden as a protection racket.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's obvious to me, you know, we all lived, the three of us, we lived through the end of the 2020 Trump campaign, where we were just begging the reporters to take the laptop seriously. And then the letter from the 51 intelligence officials gave them a reason not to write about it. They didn't want to write about it. Yep. And then they finally gave them a reason. But why do you think, because you know a lot of these people, these are still your colleagues, but you used to work in the same newsroom with a lot of them. And Hogan and I and Sonny interact with them all the time. But it's like I could understand why they would feel this way about Barack Obama. They were emotionally invested in Obama. Obama was like a force of nature. He was almost a deity to Democrats and the media. But
almost,
of course, right? So I mean, he's just this mythical figure of greatness. Yeah. That's the way they viewed. They don't have any real actual love for Joe Biden. They don't. So what is it? Is it just because he's got a D next to his name and that's good enough? They don't love him. There's no way he's in the same category as Obama.
I've done a lot of thinking on this, and I'll take my journalism hat off because I try not to express opinion, but I do have a little pop psychology on this one that I think is starting to warm on me just experientially. I don't have scientific data for it. I think that Donald Trump was a threat to all that the Washington establishment had built over 30 or 40 years. When he called the media the enemy of the people, some of my colleagues took that pretty personally. I didn't, but some people took it personally. I think the intelligence community felt the same thing. Oh, my God, Mike Flynn's going to run the intelligence community. We got to stop that. I think there was a collective effort, of which the media is just one part of, that the desire to keep the Washington where everybody was living good on the gravy is more important. And even if we have to settle for a guy who can barely walk or talk and who has a crooked son, and he probably helped his crooked son become even more crooked. We might want to do that because Donald Trump poses a threat to our correspondence dinner, to our free.
Oh, yeah. You got to save the correspondence dinner.
Yeah. That's more important to them.
Oh, my God.
And didn't let any of us go, but 1 year, by the way. So, yeah, right. I could see how they'd be upset. I do think, Tim, it is interesting, though, that, like, because I think Donald Trump utilized Twitter the way he did, too, he didn't need the filter of the nightly news. He didn't need the filter of those journalists and reporters, et cetera. I think that's a little bit of the part that they resent a little bit. He doesn't need them to make a name. I mean, most presidents don't. They're the president, but they still utilize the media in cagey ways to kind of get their message out. Trump just went right to Twitter. I think that was kind of part of it. A small part, but still a part nonetheless.
I have a theory right now. I think the media can't live without Donald Trump. And if you just look at the last week or two, if you read any major news organization, even though Donald Trump's not the president, there are 9 stories of Donald Trump to every one of Joe Biden right now. They literally can't write enough about Donald Trump because it brings their traffic up. It's a love-hate relationship, and they're never going to be extricated from it. It's going to be this way until Donald Trump's no longer on the political scene, I think.
Now, Matt, imagine trying to be one of those Republicans chasing Trump in the field.
Yeah.
Trying to catch up to him when all anyone ever talks about is Donald Trump. How can you ever break through? If you're Ron DeSantis, you must be looking around going, what in God's name do I have to do to get people to stop asking me questions about Donald Trump, right? It's or anybody
stunning,
else.
Isn't it? It's pretty stunning. And I think at the end of the day, you look at, I think Kristi Noem probably said it best in the last couple of days, why try something that's not going to happen, right? I think that at this moment, and people said, well, what do you think of Jack Smith? And I said, I think Jack Smith has done something I never imagined anyone could possibly do. They made Donald Trump into a sympathetic figure. You actually feel, even if you're not a Donald Trump fan, you feel very sympathetic right now. It's like, all right, 4 indictments, really? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And I think Americans are seen as, I think the, you know, barring something that we don't know about, Donald Trump, it has a really great shot at the nomination and maybe very clear by November. No one can take him. The real question is then what happens? And I think the thing that Republicans are underestimating, and I saw it again yesterday, is I still think they're lying to themselves why they lose elections. And Republicans have lost the last 3 elections because they haven't caught up in the early balloting game. And a great example, after the 2022 election, everybody seemed to have that Hosanna moment. Oh, we're going to go do early balloting. And then Wisconsin Supreme Court race came around. First chance to prove you got it right. They got their butts kicked in early balloting. Last night, if you go look at the Ohio vote, there's a fascinating development. The day of vote broke favorably to the Republicans. Republicans won the day of vote, and once again, they lost the early vote. Donald Trump is going to win or lose based on how Republicans form, if he's a nominee, how they perform on early voting. Early voting is a new phenomenon, and if you can get a guy that's half senile with a crooked son who doesn't come out of his basement all of 2020, and you can get him nominated with early voting, you can get Donald Trump nominated elected in 2024. I don't see Republicans yet having an A game to compete where Democrats now have a 6-year advantage, and they're getting good at it. I'll tell you how good they are. At 4 o'clock on election day, there are chasers in the Democratic Party who know still people whose ballots aren't in, who might still deliver a ballot by 7 o'clock, and they're going out getting those ballots. Republicans don't have that 5 days before the election in most places. I do think the big question for the 2024 election is it Donald Trump or not? I think it's pretty obvious it's going to be Donald Trump unless something happens. The bigger question is, do Republicans run a modern election or do they run another 2016 election and get swamped again? Ohio and Wisconsin are devastating warning signs to Republicans that they're not winning at a Republican. Ohio's a Republican state. There's no reason they should have lost. Last night.
Ohio is just about, as it used to be a battleground state. It is not a battleground state anymore. Republicans, a conservative issue, has no business losing a statewide vote in Ohio anymore.
You know, a friend of mine wanted to get an absentee ballot in Virginia in the midterms, and he emailed the Republican Party, and he got a link back of a PDF. And he's like, all right, that's pretty good. So he goes, I'm just out of curiosity. I'm going to email the Democrat Party and see what they can give me for early ballots. He asked them for an absentee ballot. Not only did they not send a link, they sent the actual form. So it was a form, and he opened up his computer. It had the times he could go vote, the places he could go vote in his area, the drivers who would pick him up, the times that the drivers were running their routes, and the numbers to the drivers to make sure he could get to the polls to go vote. Again, miles difference. The first time we got from a Democrat Party that said go vote or donate, et cetera, 9 years it took for the Republicans at the higher levels to start doing that. 9 years it took them. But the question I have for you is, you talked about the indictments. Okay, great. Indictments aren't convictions. But what do you think the chances are, even with horrible evidence and a horrible case and dumb motions by Jack Smith, what chances do you give some of these indictments actually resulting in convictions when you consider the venues, the Washington, D.C.'s, for example, the New York's, because someone I worked with on impeachment, Alan Dershowitz, said, hey, he's got the better case in all these, but he's got the most unfavorable venue. So what do you think the chances are of conviction actually are?
Yeah, Alan's been in the courtroom a lot longer than I have because I've never been in the courtroom. So and he's been there 60 years. I think there's a lot of wisdom in what he says. And I hear what Alan Dershowitz says from hundreds of legal experts. And we're at a moment of fascinating debate in America. Is the judiciary system that we've had for the first 247 years actually going to exist in the next 10? And I think when you look at jury polls and division of the country and political weaponization of prosecutors, which these are not questions that are even in doubt anymore. We have evidence of it. I'm not sure that a blue person can get a fair trial in a red state or a red person could get a thing in blue state, because all of a sudden justice became what our political whim was, not what the evidence and our duty called it to be. We have to recalibrate the mores of our judicial system, meaning the people have to say, listen, I don't like Donald Trump, but he deserves a fair trial. I don't like Hunter Biden, but he deserves a fair trial. We're not there yet. We have gone so far from that. Not only are the prosecutors and the FBI agents practicing politics in the name of justice, yeah, a lot of the people I talk to are like, oh, I just want to get him convicted. And I've heard that both ways. Like, oh, let's go get Hunter Biden. Let's go. That's the wrong thing. We never used to talk that way.
Everything's very, very tribal. Very tribal.
Yeah, it is tribal. Yep.
So, Sonny? We got to let John go here in a second. Do you have anything
left? My final question for you, John, we have been talking about this a lot because the three of us kind of disagree on debates, and I love debates. Tim and Hogan, see.
Well, no. Debates are entertaining and they're really great to watch, but if you're working on the campaign, it's a gigantic hassle. That's
so my question to you is, should Donald Trump debate in the primary debates coming up?
You know, I never give advice to candidates because I've always tried to stay in my pocket as a journalist. But I'll say this. Yes. I think from my reporting right now, and again, Donald Trump could change in a moment. Notice he's always full of surprises. I think Donald Trump will show up in Milwaukee and steal the show, but he won't be at the debate.
You think he? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I would watch for the morning of the debate. I'd watch for maybe a cameo appearance that nobody sees coming. And then maybe while the debate's going on, those old friends at Fox News that he sometimes feels have chagrined him, maybe they have to compete with some Twitter guy who interviews Donald Trump at the exact same time. And all of a sudden the oxygen leaves the Fox News debate and goes over to what Donald Trump does.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump did a John Madden and after the debate got a telestrator and, you know, narrated what the guys did. That would be far more entertaining than the debate.
It certainly would. Oh my God.
Donald Trump does. And I think he's got something up his sleeve that no one yet is prepared for.
Also
just walk in at the last minute and say, screw it, I'm coming in. I don't know. I think he's going to steal the oxygen from the room without having to go take the blows at the debate.
Absolutely. Anything is, any of those things you just said is certainly possible. I think the most likely thing is some counter-programming of some kind. Like you described. That's 100%. The most likely thing.
I think there'll be a morning and night counter-programming. That's my reporting is indicating on.
Well, John Solomon, thank you very much. We're going to be trying to be respectful of your time. I know you got to go do TV now, which we really appreciate you coming in beforehand and squeezing this in. And you're saying, look forward to next week. There's another shoe dropping.
Yeah, we're going to have some more facts that we're going to be able to put out there pretty soon. So great to be with you. Thank you. And I really love the podcast. It's awesome.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate it. And for listeners, please like, follow, subscribe, and comment, and do all the things, because this has been the Line Drive Podcast.